Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Living human values in our daily lives, we associate good human values, honesty, patience, forgiveness, compassion, sacrifice, as values that only the saints and the rishis or enlightened ones can abide by. But how can each of us live these values in our lives, even in the most difficult circumstances? And why is doing this vital to our growth and our progress? Okay, so first of all, human values are not things for only the sages and the saints and the rishis. This is the stuff our lives are made of. Whether you call it culture, I mean, any culture we are a part of, whatever culture we come from, Indian culture has this very, very deeply and strongly. We call it sanskaras. An important aspect of sanskaras are all of these values and ethics. Honesty, compassion, virtue, all of that. Generosity, giving, these are the sanskaras, the culture that we talk about. But it's not just Indian culture. It's all cultures. Most of us get it in our religion or our spirituality. We get it from our parents. We get it from our grandparents. But this is not just the stuff of enlightened masters. This is the stuff that if we want to survive as a civilization, we need. Yes, obviously we need it if we want to be enlightened, but we need it even if we're not looking for enlightenment, even if we're just looking at it, if we're just looking for how do we live in society? How do we create a society that lives in the light? Forget enlightenment even, but just a society that lives more in the light of honesty and cooperation and compassion than one that lives in corruption and lies and deceit and stealing, competition. So these are building blocks of life, not just enlightenment or rishis. And in fact, that's why when you look at the limbs of yoga that Patanjali gave us, well, before we get to asana, which is our limb number 3, before we get to pranayama, which is limb 4, the first two limbs are the yamas and the niyamas. How do we live? Nonviolence, truthfulness, honesty, non-stealing. So all of these virtues, different words as the questioner gave, but the same virtues, sharing, giving. So in the yamas and niyamas, we learn apigraha, non-hoarding. We learn asteya, non-stealing. Well, those are just the different ways of saying generosity. On the one hand, I'm hoarding. On the other hand, I'm giving. So if I'm not hoarding, therefore I'm giving. If I'm not stealing, therefore I'm allowing other people to have what is theirs. And of course, that goes into every aspect of our life. I mean, not stealing doesn't just mean that I don't lean over and grab Susie's water bottle, that I don't take the shirt off someone's back. Non-stealing means how I live every day. What I eat, what I buy, what I wear, because so much of that our society is made up of, the commodities, actually have been produced through stealing. The land, the resources, the water, the health, the time of women, of children. This is where sweatshops come in. It's where child labor comes in. It's where indigenous people end up losing their land. So every one of us is compelled, if we want to live a life that's yogic, that's dharmic, that's righteous. Because a yogic life, of course, has nothing to do with how long you can stand on your head. It's the righteous life. It's the dharmic life. So these virtues are things that are crucial in all of our lives. And the flip side of them is the me, 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 me. The ego life, the I, me, mine. What about me? Where am I in all this? Pooja Swamiji always says so beautifully, he says, you know, I is always capital. Doesn't matter whether it comes at the beginning of a sentence or the middle of a sentence. Any other letter, it's only capital at the beginning of a sentence. Middle of the sentence, it's lowercase. But I, even in the middle of the sentence, even at the I end of a sentence, wherever I'm talking about I, it's always capital. And he says, and that capital I is a wall. It's a wall between us, on an internal level, between me and my real self, between me and my heart, between me and my spiritual progress, between me and the divine. It also becomes a wall between us, because the more focused on me I am, the less able I am to connect with you. And so he says that the answer is we bend the eye. We literally make it horizontal. And when it goes from being vertical in capital to being horizontal, it goes from being a wall to being a bridge. And it becomes a bridge between me and the divine, and between us. Because it's the I that makes us contract on the inside. When you're in a fight with someone, and think about it for a minute, think back to the last fight you had with a loved one. Someone you love, a family member, a friend. Think back to the last fight you had with them. Chances are you won't even be able to remember what it was about because we fight over stupid things. But what's important in the fights is it's always, I don't want to give in. I'm right. And yeah, we're right. But that sense of holding on to our rightness causes us to contract on the inside. And it makes us separate from our loved ones. And it makes us stand even taller, even more rigid. And this is where in Indian culture there's such an emphasis on bowing. Why do we bow all the time? And it's not just Indian culture, it's actually so many of the Asian cultures. The religions, the cultures, we're always bowing. Why? Because it reminds us, be humble. Be humble. And be a bridge. Rather than standing rigid and tall, if I can bow, I become a bridge. And that reconnects us. And whether it's myself to my own heart I've lost, because I've contracted and constricted so much on the inside, that I've lost even the way to my own heart, or with my loved ones, with my community, with my colleagues, or with me and God. Sometimes we get so set in our ways, set in what's right, that we lose that ability to be a bridge. And that's where we lose. And so all of these virtues, compassion, patience, giving, they're virtues of connection to each other and to ourselves as divine beings. Because when we have patience for ourselves, what it is it's the divine one in us seeing and recognizing the human one in us. It's the true self seeing and recognizing the vehicle, the vessel. It's the same reason that if your car breaks down on the side of the road, you don't beat it. Or if you do beat it, you feel pretty silly for that afterwards. And if you see somebody hitting their car, most of us think, oh my God, what do you know? Look at him, he's hitting the car. Because it's not the car's fault. Car didn't wake up in the morning and say, I know what I'm going to do today. I'm going to break down. That's what happens. It's the same thing that happens to us as humans. We make mistakes. We forget things. We forget ourselves. And so these virtues of love, of compassion, of patience, of caring, of generosity, They're not just for others in the world, they're for ourselves. From ourselves to ourselves. And without that, we can't take another step on our spiritual path. Because until and unless I can have compassion for myself, that I can see myself as worthy of love and compassion, how can I have compassion for another? How can I connect with someone if I'm not even able to open up to who I am? Then who is it that's connecting with them? Then it's just my brain. It's my mind, which is an instrument of separation. Our heart is the instrument of connection. So if I've got my heart all locked up, there's no way I can connect with another being. There's no way I can have real compassion for another being. Real love, real generosity. Then everything I'm doing is just for myself. I may give to you, but I'm going to only give to you so that I can feel better about myself. And it's not bad. It's certainly better than not giving. But it's not quite as high as we can go. And so we need to realize that on the one hand, yes, we say we're only humans. We're not the rishis or the sages. But on the other hand, we need to recognize that all of these virtues are not just for our enlightened masters. They're not just for rishis and sages. The rishis and sages gave us tools for us. The teachings of yoga, the scriptures, the insights, the truths, it's not this is how a rishi should live. It's not how this is how a yogi should live. It's not how this is how the enlightened master should live. They already know how to live. They don't need a booklet. There's no, you know, how a good rishi lives booklet, how a sage lives booklet. Well, if they're a sage, if they're a rishi, if they're a saint, if they're enlightened, they don't need the booklet. The booklet's for us. So all of these teachings that they've given us are for us. But what we do is we let ourselves off the hook a lot. In the name of compassion, under the guise of compassion, we're actually not being compassionate to ourselves, because to deprive ourselves of the highest possibility of who we can be internally is not compassionate. To say, oh, well, you're not a rishi or a sage, you've had a troubled life, you've been abused, you've been abandoned, you've been betrayed, whatever our story is. Therefore, don't worry, honey. Just sit on the couch and eat potato chips forever. That's okay. Don't worry. Yeah, be angry. Sure, hit people, no problem. We understand. You've had it tough. Sure, become an alcoholic, become a drug addict. It's okay. You've got the story to back it up. It's not your fault, don't worry. That's a lack of compassion for ourselves. Because that's saying you don't have it within you to connect with your true self. Your whole identity, your whole story, that's not the true self. That's just where this body's been. It's what's happened to this body. Not the soul. Not the true self. The true self has never been abused or abandoned or cheated or lied to or forgotten about. The true self doesn't have complexes or depression or anxiety or fears. That's all the stuff of this body-mind. And so to allow ourselves to spend our entire lives in the jail of this body-mind is not very compassionate. It's not holding us up to the possibility of actually who we are. So the highest level of compassion actually says, get off the couch. Let go of the bottle. Let go of the cigarette. Stop hitting people. This isn't who you are. Wake up. Yeah, that stuff happened. Okay, it happens to so many of us. That was act one of your life. The curtain has dropped. The intermission has passed. The curtain has now risen. On act two of your life, it's a brand new day. Brand new scene, brand new stage. Brand new place. But you need to show up. You're the only one that's missing for this act two of your life. And that's the highest level of compassion. We don't berate ourselves when we slip. We all slip. We don't berate ourselves for, again, having fears or judgments, impatience, pain. But we don't allow ourselves to keep slipping into it. We keep holding ourselves up to that highest truth of who we are. And that's the deepest compassion. That's the deepest generosity. That's what patience is for. It's not let me be patient while I waste breath after breath, minute after minute of my life. It's let me have patience while I climb these steps. Let me have patience while I open the curtains to let the sun in. Let me have patience while I peel my layers back one by one. Because that's the stuff we need patience for. And then, of course, we can have it for others. But make no mistake, those virtues are not virtues just of those living in the caves who are already enlightened. Those are virtues they've given us through their enlightenment to help us know who we are and to help us be able to get closer and closer and closer and closer to that. So those are for everybody.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Aliyah, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAIN.org.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna makes it so beautifully clear that right speech, tapas of speech, has to include truth, yes, but it also has to include kindness and beneficialness. I don't know if that's a word, beneficialness. That what we speak, in order for it to be dharmic speech, right speech, has to be true, kind, and beneficial. So a question came up. If the truth is not kind or beneficial, then what do we do with it? So if we're not supposed to speak it, if Lord Krishna reminds us that we're only supposed to speak that which is kind and beneficial, in addition to being true, well, if something is only true, what do we do with it? Well, there's a couple pieces of this. First of all, there's a lot of truth that doesn't necessarily need to be spoken. Just because it's true doesn't mean it needs to be spoken. For example, we all have personality issues that we may face with family members, with colleagues, with people in our social circle. And unless that person is someone with whom we've made a commitment that we are going to grow together, to move together hand in hand on a spiritual path, like a husband and wife, for example. If it's not somebody like that, then the highest good is not for us to figure out how can we tell each other everything about the other one that bothers us. There's no point. It doesn't serve anyone. Yes, in a marriage, you don't want to brush things under the carpet too much. Occasionally, it's okay. Even in our marriages, your husband, your wife does something that bothers you, does something you're angry. Doesn't mean we have to always bring it up. Many times we can choose peace. We can choose happiness. We have an option. The loved one does something or says something, we feel very annoyed inside. Well, at that moment of feeling annoyed, we're at a crossroads on our path. One path is the, well, I have to share it. I have to tell him. I have to tell her. They should know how I feel. They should say sorry. They should promise they're never going to do it again. My feelings are the most important. And the other path is, right now, what I want to feel is peace. Right now, what I want to feel is love. And I have the power. I don't need this person to apologize, to bow at my feet, to, you know, cry all over my toes in remorse and guilt in order to feel peace or joy. I've just convinced myself I do. I've convinced myself that until that person acknowledges what they've done, apologizes, feels remorse, promises never to do it again, that I can't get in touch with my peace or my joy, that that's sitting in their hands, that they've got the reins of my happiness in their hands. But that's not the truth. I have them. And so we're at that crossroad. And there's no right answer. There are absolutely times in our lives, particularly in a marriage, to which we've committed deeply, in which it really is important to share with the loved one, you know, this really causes me pain. Much more important than just letting it fester inside. But then there are also plenty of times in which letting it go, just choosing love in that moment, choosing peace in that moment, choosing ease in that moment is a very real possibility. Those of us from abroad, much more so than Indians, have really been raised with this disservice, I believe, which is that everything must be talked about. Everything must be processed. Everything must be worked out. I'm a little bit upset about this or that. You hurt my feelings a little bit here or there. And we have to spend the next 2 hours or 5 hours or 2 days processing this. And this is a very Western invention. In India, it's not like that at all. And it's one of the reasons, I think, actually, that people in India have got such longer-lasting, stronger marriages than people abroad, is they're really able to just say, oh, forget it. Not in a way that they're holding a grudge, not in a way that it's festering inside, not in a way that they feel like they're the martyr who's always having to let it go, but just a real conscious decision to choose peace, to choose love, rather than to choose processing, rather than to make sure the other person understands. They love us. It's more important than always understanding us. So that's one aspect of what do we do with the truth. If we can let it go, let it go. You're going to be happier. Your loved ones are going to be happier. Not to always feel like everything they do hurts you, like everything has to be processed. And you're going to find you've got a lot more free time on your hands. Because all the time that doesn't go into having these elaborate, long discussions is time that we're able to use for so many other things. So that's one thing to do with the truth, is we let it go. Then there are times when it's bigger or it's more important for us to then to just let it go. But it's still not kind, it's still not beneficial. What do we do with it then? Well, the truth doesn't actually have to always be spoken verbally. So for example, someone in my life, a loved one, I've noticed that they've started making decisions that aren't necessarily in their best interest. Maybe they've gained a lot of weight. Maybe they've started drinking a little bit too much alcohol. Maybe they've taken up cigarette smoking. Maybe they've gotten themselves into a bad relationship. It's a friend of mine, a child of mine, whatever it is. Now, bringing that up is certainly kind if I have that person's best interest at heart. But most of us know that in 99 cases out of 100, it's not beneficial because it goes nowhere. Very few people say, well, thank you so much for noticing the weight I've gained by stuffing myself full of chocolate cakes to numb my depression. I'm so glad you pointed that out to me. I had no idea. I hadn't noticed that my clothes were tight. I hadn't noticed that I spend most of my time with a hand in a chocolate chip bag these days. Thanks for pointing that out. Nobody says that. Nobody says, oh, thanks for mentioning that I've been drinking a lot. I hadn't noticed all the empty bottles lying around. And so what happens is people become defensive. And they push us away. And so not only wasn't it beneficial in terms of helping them, but it actually now has created a wedge between us in which I've lost my possibility to be able to help them at all. And this is where we start to look for other ways of expressing the truth than just sitting the person down and saying, I notice you've been drowning your sorrows in meaningless sex, in gambling, in chocolate cake. I notice that you've gotten yourself involved in a relationship with someone who is abusive. You should get out. Well, everybody's got a head on their shoulders, and in Hindi there's an expression that everybody eats chapatis. Like we all know. If I've been beaten up by the person I'm in a relationship with, I know that. The black eyes on my face, the bloody nose is on my face. I don't need you to tell me that that person might not be good for me. But if I'm still in a relationship, it means that for some reason, I'm not looking at that. If I'm still doing the eating, I'm doing the drinking, I'm doing the gambling, I'm doing the promiscuity, well, it's not because I'm stupid. It's not because I can't see it. It's because for some reason, it's serving me right now. For some reason, there's something going on in my life that I don't want to be looking at, that I don't want to be dealing with, that I'm turning to these poor substitutes for. There's something going on in me emotionally. It's created a situation where I keep coming back home to somebody who beats me, or to somebody who's cheating on me, or to somebody who's not good for me and in some other reason. There's very little that we can tell somebody that they don't really already know about themselves. And so even though it may be true, and in this case, even though it may be kind, we're really trying to help them. If they're not going to take it and they're just going to get defensive and it's just going to push us away from them, then it's not beneficial. And so what do we do? There's ways of holding that truth that's not speaking it. And so, for example, in the cases that I gave, how can we be a good friend to this person? To help them through what we know they're going through without naming it. We don't have to say, I notice you've been drowning your sorrows in alcohol. All we have to do is reach out to them as a friend. Spend more time with them. Give them more love. Create more space for them. Instead of mentioning the alcohol or the food or the gambling or whatever they're doing, we create space in which we say, how's your life? How are things going? How's your marriage? How's your job? I mean, if they're our friend, maybe we have some intuitive way of knowing what might be wrong. And we ask them about that. How are things going for you? Is there some way that I can be of help to you, of use to you? Is there something you'd like to talk about? And we are able to stand there as containers, as pillars, as models of that love. And then they may open up. But we're able to hold the truth and respond from the truth without necessarily having to speak it and shove it down their throats. And the last piece of this is the stuff that's neither kind nor beneficial. And that's the stuff that we definitely don't want to say. It may be true. Somebody may have gained a bunch of weight. The dress they're wearing may make them look really ugly. They may have made a really bad decision in something that's irrevocable. They can't change it. They may have just married someone we think is horrible for them. So it's a situation where they can't change it. Or they can't change it right now anyway. And so us pointing out the truth is just hurtful. And that's when we learn the fourth thing we have to ask ourselves, which is, does it improve upon the silence? And this is true about anything we speak. Does it improve upon the silence? And if not, well, there's always silence. And silence is beautiful. Silence is wonderful. The place we get into trouble with is when we're uncomfortable with the silence, and so we just keep talking. We say things we shouldn't. We say things we later regret. And this is where it's so important to just allow ourselves to be comfortable in the silence, and to know that there's a sacredness in the silence. It's one of the great gifts that a practice of silence gives us, that a practice of meditation gives us, is to get comfortable in the silence.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. We talk so much about opening the heart on the spiritual journey and the music, which is always such an important aspect. It's not just entertainment. Music is energy. You know, sadly these days, so many of us think of music just as entertainment. Well, I like this type of music, or I like that type of music, or who's your favorite band, or, you know, this is danceable, that's not danceable. But Indian culture actually had such a deep, deep awareness of the science of sound, that it's the only religion in the world I know of that actually has an entire scripture, the Samved, dedicated to sound. And here's what's interesting about that is it's not Indian sound. It's not Hindu sound. It's the science of sound. Many years ago, I had the wonderful opportunity to be in Venice, Italy. And from Venice, we went to a big yoga program that was being held in Assisi. And in Assisi, we went to this very, very ancient cathedral of St. Francis. And there was a program of Gregorian chanting, which is the ancient and sacred chanting. And Pooja Swamiji was there, and this other very, very renowned saint who has since passed away, unfortunately, was also there. And the Gregorian chanting went on for quite some time. And after it ended, and the rest of us were just thinking, oh, this is so beautiful, oh, this is so beautiful. And when it ended, Pooja Swamiji and this other Swamiji, also, as I said, very renowned, very learned, the two of them looked at each other and simultaneously they said, it's the Samved. That the sound of that which we were hearing in a cathedral in Assisi was the sound of the Samved. And that in a way that sounds much more amazing and miraculous than it really should, because these things actually should be the normal, but nonetheless, tragically, they're not in our lives the normal, so it seems really amazing that deeply spiritual people living in different places, worshiping God by different names in different forms in different ways, but deeply connected to the divine, having deep meditative practices, connected to the same truth. And that that truth came through them in a very similar way. And so in Italy, we end up with Gregorian chants in the church lineage. And in India, we end up with the Samved in the Hindu lineage. But that truth of the science of sound was so much the same that even though neither of them had ever heard Gregorian chanting, immediately they recognized, this is our Samved. Words are different. Tune is the same. And the last point I just wanted to mention on that, since Anandara so beautifully brought us onto this topic of sound, is whatever we're doing, whether we're singing, whether we're making music with our hands, or whether we're speaking, we're doing something that creates sound. We may think, oh, I just said that. It was only a joke. I didn't mean it. Or we yell. We think, well, I didn't mean to yell. I was just, you know, whatever. And what we don't realize is the impact of that. Yeah, we know the emotional impact. We know what it feels like to be yelled at. But what we don't think about is on a physiological level, sound is actually energy waves. I mean, that's how it works. It's not that I've got some uncanny special ability to know from your lips what you're saying. I mean, some people can read lips, most of us can't. The way that I know what you're saying is it comes out of your mouth, creates waves, that goes into my ear, tells my brain what you're saying, and whether it's a very low frequency sound, which is going to have waves that look like this, or a very high frequency sound, it's going to have waves that look like this. Well, the way that you know that is because of the way that those waves vibrate differently in your ear. And that creates not just an understanding of words, but it creates an energetic impact. And this is really the power that sound has. And whether it's the sound that comes out of our mouth, I mean, people do this all the time, kind of jokingly, but it actually is science. You take a dog and you say to it, "Oh, you stupid, stupid, ugly thing." And it's going to wag its tail and, you know, come up and rub itself against you because it thinks that you're criticizing it. And, I mean, it thinks that you're loving it. And you could say to it, "I love you." And it's going to, you know, whimper. And because what it's picking up on is the sound. It's not the words. So the tone of being angry, regardless of whether with that tone you're saying "I love you" or you're saying "bad dog," is going to make the dog whimper. And the tone of "I love you," even if you're saying, "Oh, you're the ugliest, stupidest thing, I'm going to, you know, starve you for 3 days," it's going to wag its tail and rub up against you because it picks up on the energy. And so I just wanted to mention this because I'm listening to the sound. It always touches all of us so deeply, and I feel like it's so important to understand, particularly for those of us from the West, the real power that sound has. It's not just "I like this" or "I like that," but how can we use sound, music, and also the sound of our own voice to actually change the energetic waves in the world around us.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
When I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for taking you to your therapies, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati, and thanks for coming back and joining us for more of inspiration and transformation. Usually we talk about mukti, moksha, this freedom, this liberation, as something that happens after we die. In the Hindu tradition, in the Indian spiritual tradition, there's a lot of emphasis placed on after death, how do we attain liberation? And so the pujas and the prayers that we do, the sadhana that we do, so that I don't have to come back again after this birth. I won't go into the whole teaching of the whole law of karma, but really in short, we keep coming back in bodies as long as we have a karmic bank account, either positive or negative, as long as we have karmic things we need to work out, we're going to keep coming back in the body to work them out. When we're done with that karmic account, we are said to have moksha, or mukti. And therefore, we don't have to come back. We merge in with the divine. But then we have this jivan mukti, which is the freedom, the liberation while living. And this is actually what Pooja Swamiji speaks about, what so many of the masters emphasize is, you don't have to wait till you die. It's not about after I die, then I'll be free. We can actually be free while we live. Because it's not the body that's the jail. Yes, the body gets old, the body gets sick, we have to let it go. Just like eventually we have to get new clothes, we have to get new shoes, eventually we're going to wear them out. But the bondage that we experience, that sense of being bound, that sense of being chained, it's not from the body. It's the mind, it's the desires, it's the ego. That's what keeps us in jail. Otherwise, as I was saying last night, the body is a source of great joy. Our eyes show us sunsets. Our hands hold our loved ones. Our ears are able to hear beautiful music. The body is not a source of bondage unless the mind is keeping us in bondage. And so the real chain, the real jail that we're in is our own mind. It is our own ego. It is our own sense of expectations. It should be like this. Why isn't it like that? This is right. This is wrong. These people should act like this. They should do that. They should speak like this. The world should dance according to my tune. So as long as I have expectations of how the world should be, of how the people around me should act, how they should treat me, how they should speak to me, what they should do, which direction the stock market should move in, which direction the interest rates should move in, which direction the traffic on the freeway should move in. As long as I have expectations of that, I'm going to be frustrated because I have no control over anything other than myself. We think we can control people around us, but we can't. It never works. We can yell and cry and plead and take promises. We can sulk. We can slam doors. We can do all of the stuff we do. But it doesn't actually work. We only end up creating more and more distance. And so that creates the jail that I live in. It's my own sense of what's going on in the world. It's my own reaction to the world. This is good, this is bad, this is wrong, this is right. So the jivan mukti is the one who has been able to let go of those expectations, who has been able to understand, oh God, let me just be a tool in your hands. Like this microphone has no attachment to what I say. It's not like I say one thing, it gets louder because it's really happy I'm saying that. I say something else, it gets frustrated, it says, forget it, I'm not going to relay that. It understands it's just a tool. Well, so are we. Just as ridiculous as it would be for the microphone to stand up and take a bow at the end of a lecture or the end of a concert, it's just as ridiculous for us to stand up and take a bow. Because just as the mic is the tool in my hands, so are we the tool in the divine's hands. But as long as I think I'm the doer, why is it always me? Why do I always have to be the one? Or if it weren't for me, I'm the one who made that happen. I'm the one who does this. I'm the most important. That whole sense of doership is actually what binds us. And when we're really able to just be a tool in God's hands, when we're really able to just say, okay, God, not my will, but your will. Because the truth is, we don't even actually have an alternative. Saying, no, 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 it must be my will, doesn't get us anywhere anyway. It's not like the universe dances according to our tune anyway. So the Jiva Mukti says, okay, God, use me. Use me. And then we're able to be that tool, and then we're free. And then however many years we have the body, it's just a blessing. The body isn't something that binds us. We're free in it. And then we're living in heaven here. As Pooja Swamiji says, we don't have to wait for heaven after we die. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.